WNYC is supported by Blue Apron, delivering gourmet recipes and fresh ingredients right to your door. Listeners get their first three meals free at blueapron.com/WNYC. That's blueapron.com/WNYC.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Sixth Amendment to the Constitution begins with these words: "In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury." But in a recent article linked on our show page, the New York Times reported, quote, "Trial by jury, a hallowed American right, is vanishing." What's actually vanishing, and why does it matter? Well, Lauren Brooke Eisen, a senior counsel in the Brennan Center's Justice Program at the NYU School of Law, joins us now to discuss what's happening in the American justice system. Pleased to welcome her back to our show.
Thank you for having me.
And if there are some lawyers in the audience, or if you've had some experience in the criminal justice system in the whole matter of jury or non-jury trial or taking a plea, well, we will be taking some calls in the second half of this segment. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can also write to us on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. The New York Times reported that the three federal courthouses in the Southern District of New York held only 50 criminal trials in all of 2015, the lowest number since 2004. Has there been a similar decline in criminal jury trials across the United States?
There has. In fact, the latest numbers reveal that about 95% of state and federal criminal cases are resolved by a plea negotiation, and so they never, ever get a trial.
So it's not just federal courthouses, it's all courthouses.
This is a trend that we're seeing in state courts, we're seeing in both criminal and civil cases as well.
Do lawyers expect to see a certain number of trials each year on average, given their experience with defendants and litigants?
I think that most prosecutors at this point plea out their cases. It's typical for the average prosecutor to have, you know, a couple of trials a year, depending on if they're a felony prosecutor. Very few misdemeanor cases ever get a trial in this country.
And how long has this decline been going on? Don't some legal researchers argue that the use of juries has been declining for decades?
It has been declining for decades. But a steady decline. So every year there are less and less criminal and civil trials. In fact, only about 2% of state civil cases are resolved by jury trials.
The United States has over 2.3 million people in prisons and jails. How are they getting there if fewer trials are happening?
That's an excellent point. So our prison population and our jail population, they're just absolutely swelling. And the causes of that are complicated. So, the reason, you know, we have so many people behind bars,
despite a declining crime rate.
Despite a decline in crime rate since the 1990s. So in fact, since 1991, the violent crime rate has been cut almost in half. We've seen a decline in crime for decades now. And the jury trials play in to mass incarceration because so many people just plead guilty, even if prosecutors have very thin evidence, that defendants will plead guilty because prosecutors have leverage. They have mandatory minimums at their disposal. They have habitual offender laws at their disposal. So for defendants, it's almost gambling to go to trial, because if they go to trial on some of these mandatory minimum cases where prosecutors will charge the mandatory minimum, they could spend decades behind bars.
I'd imagine also there's pressure if you are a person of color in an area where you're likely to have an all-white jury, or if you're just somebody who may not make a good impression and you worry that a jury might not like you even if you didn't commit the crime?
That definitely plays into the calculation as well. In some jurisdictions, a defense attorney will tell his or her client, you know what, the odds are against you winning because of this judge, because of this jury pool.
Do lawyers want to avoid jury trials for various reasons?
Prosecutors have very full dockets. Judges have clogged dockets. Public defenders have hundreds of cases. In fact, in New Orleans, the Orleans Parish Public Defender's Office has stopped taking new cases because they are so understaffed and they have so many cases. So it's very, very hard to even go to trial in this country because cases are very long, they're very expensive, and if you're a prosecutor or a public defender and you can barely keep up with your caseload, it's hard to take out, you know, it's hard to take a month of your life to go to trial.
Why are the dockets clogged if a number of jury trials is declining?
Well, there are hearings. There are a lot of things that happen in court outside just the trial process. There are some bench trials as well, but there are many hearings and court proceedings and arraignments and bond hearings. So it's not that courtrooms aren't busy. It's that they're not busy hearing jury trials.
Are the number of trials by judges, bench trials, up a number? If I were accused of a crime, might I choose to have a bench trial rather than a jury trial?
In some cases, you can choose to have a bench trial. Some misdemeanor cases, depending on the jurisdiction you're in, would automatically have a bench trial instead of a jury trial. You're not always guaranteed a jury trial, depending on the nature of the crime.
But I might also assume that judges know the law and are trained to consider all legal issues in a way that a jury might not.
Absolutely. And some defendants will choose to have a bench trial over a jury trial. And they're also quicker and oftentimes more efficient. However, you're then giving up the right to have a trial in front of a jury of your peers.
Do the rules vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction?
They do. The rules vary. And in some jurisdictions, certain misdemeanors are eligible for bench trials. So it depends on where you're living. And if it's a state crime, a federal crime.
Aren't many judges at the state level elected? How does that affect things?
That is a great question. Most judges in this country at the state level are elected, and there has been some research that closer to election, judges will often be less reluctant to acquit someone of a crime.
Now, we're also seeing a lot more things going into arbitration.
Absolutely.
Why would people see that as preferable?
So,
in arbitration, is my sense, both sides get something.
In civil cases, many big corporations, and in fact, even some smaller corporations, require their employees to sign arbitration clauses, or a lot of contracts contain arbitration clauses. And this is purposeful because civil litigation is very expensive. You have endless depositions, discovery proceedings, very long trials, and corporations are also afraid to leave millions, if not billions, at the table if a jury rules against them.
My guest is Lauren Brooke Eisen. She's written Trials Bypass Jury, Jury Trials Vanish, and Justice is Served Behind Closed Doors for the Brennan's Center. Jed Rakoff, a veteran judge, described this trend as hugely disappointing. What reason is there for disappointment or concern?
It is very disappointing for many people. One of the most concerning issues with criminal trials is with the lack of criminal trials, is that defendants will often plead guilty when there is very little evidence that they committed a crime. Oftentimes, we've seen this increased trend of defendants even pleading guilty to crimes that they may not have committed. And that's because they have so much to lose if they proceed to trial on greater charges with these mandatory minimums. And a lot of defendants, they're offered time served for the time they've already spent behind bars or very little jail or prison time if they plead to certain offenses. And they'll often do that to avoid the risk of being convicted at trial and serving decades.
On the other hand, are there benefits to the jury system that are being lost?
There are many benefits. In terms of trial advocacy, very few attorneys are learning the art of trial advocacy. And when they are faced with needing to go to trial for a civil or criminal case, they just don't have that experience. So this is a huge loss for the legal field. Additionally, a lot of people think that less people would be behind bars if we had more jury trials, because the evidence that prosecutors often have is not actually enough to prove to prove that someone actually committed a crime the standard of indictment is reasonable cause, and the standard at trial is actually proof beyond a reasonable doubt. So that's a big deal.
Do any of the current Supreme Court justices have experience with trial advocacy?
That's a great question. So some of the criticism about Supreme Court justices is that there are very few public defenders who've become Supreme Court justices.
If you want to make it in politics, it's best to be a prosecutor,
yes,
not a defense attorney.
And so almost all of the U.S. Supreme Court justices in recent years have had experience as a prosecutor, very few as a public defender. And, some of the Supreme Court justices, yes, they have had litigation experience.
Now, in his first inaugural address in 1801, Thomas Jefferson said, quote, "The wisdom of our sages and the blood of our heroes has been devoted to the attainment of trial by jury. It should be the creed of our political faith." Was he reacting to the fact that in most countries, judges are the ones who actually wind up not only conducting the trial but also making the judgments?
Absolutely. And jury trials were intended as a check on prosecutorial power and in the vein of participatory justice and participatory democracy. So this idea that we have such few trials really gets to the heart of, the lack of participatory justice that we are seeing today. Jury trials are designed to test the evidence in as fair a way as possible and to ensure that convictions don't happen unless there's proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And so what we're seeing today, I think it is a problem for our democracy.
Are cases decided by juries more likely to be overturned than ones where the judge is the one who makes the decision or a deal has been made?
That's a great question. What we're seeing is that prosecutors tend to take cases to trial that they know are sure things. And one of the reasons that's happening is because if you have so few trials a year, you're going to take the cases that are sure things. You're going to take the cases that you're going to win.
Because they do take time.
They take a lot of time. They're very expensive. And, a lot of people have suggested that if prosecutors had more trials, they would have less to lose. There would be less of a political issue and less of sort of this media frenzy if they did lose cases, because it would just be more commonplace. If you're taking one or two cases to trial a year and you lose half of them, that's a big deal.
In Jefferson's time, weren't juries comprised only of white males? Has greater diversity in juries played a role in the declining use of jury trials?
That's a complicated question, and in some jurisdictions, because we've seen the growth of a lot of communities and cities, what we're seeing is that some juries are actually less diverse. So if you're from a specific neighborhood in a community, you may not really have a jury of your peers because of what's called peremptory challenges, which is when the prosecutors and the defense attorneys can just strike people from the jury for no reason. They don't even have to tell the court why.
Trial proceedings become part of the public record. How transparent are the procedures in cases that aren't tried?
Some cases are sealed, and arbitration cases are not open to the public. And in most civil cases, anyone can just walk into the courtroom. But with this decline in civil cases, we've seen much less transparency because arbitration cases are not public.
Are plea deals ever motivated by fears of how impartial judges might or might not be?
Absolutely. Every case is different, but if a judge is seen as biased by the public defender, that public defender owes his or her client the right to tell the client, what the reality of the situation is. And in some cases, public defenders are in very awkward positions. They're caught in a bind where they want to just they want the best for their client, and they know that pleading to a certain charge, even if their client may not have committed the crime, or even if there might not be great evidence, they know that they might be gambling at trial.
I'm speaking with Lauren Brooke Eisen of the Brennan Center. She's a senior counsel in the Brennan Center's Justice Program at the NYU School of Law. We're talking about the decline in jury trials, and we will take a little break and come back with more. We invite your calls if you have had any experience in this regard as a lawyer, as a prosecutor, or perhaps as a defendant, or as somebody who's an accused, whatever. Our number is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at wmyc.org/Lopate or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We're back with Lauren Brooke Eisen. We're talking about how trials are bypassing juries. Jury trials are vanishing and justice is being served behind closed doors. She is a senior counsel in the Brennan Center's Justice Program at the NYU School of Law. And we are inviting your calls if you've had experiences in this area. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at wmyc.org/Lopate or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We've had discussions on the show about evictions in New York City's rental housing market. One reporter told us that you can see lawyers for landlords accosting tenants before they even go into the courtroom. And most tenants facing eviction don't have lawyers.
That is very, that's absolutely true. And you are not guaranteed a lawyer in civil trials. So the protection is for criminal trials, for criminal charges where you would lose your liberty.
Let's take a call from John from the Upper West Side. Hi, you're on the air. John, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
And interestingly enough, I've probably seen more trials than most lawyers. For about 15 years, I worked in the world of creating trials for corporations that have lawsuits against them. They go out and they hire a group of lawyers that create juries. They hire actors. They have the actors play the parts of the different litigants, and real lawyers come in and try the case. And at the end, they get a very close understanding of what they might be liable for in money damages. So they decide whether or not to try to negotiate, plea, or actually go to court based on the information they got from their fake trial. How interesting is that?
That's absolutely fascinating. And, it makes sense from the corporation's perspective because trials are incredibly time-consuming and incredibly expensive. And if you're going to decide to go ahead and have a full-fledged trial, you should definitely know what you're facing.
On the other hand, they can afford to do that. If I were accused of a murder that I didn't commit, I can't come up with something similar and see how a group of actors playing the jury would react to me.
Absolutely not. And, that's why you would need to rely on your defense attorney to help you negotiate that process.
And if it was a public defender who had an awful lot of cases, he might very well kind of push me to plead guilty, to take a plea.
That happens. And that happens as well. A lot of judges will push both parties in civil and criminal cases to negotiate a plea or negotiate a settlement because the judge may not want his or her docket clogged.
Let's take another call. Joe from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me. I worked as a clerk in New Jersey for a year doing a lot of civil cases, going mostly car accident cases. And in the year that I was watching as a clerk, the juries never got the verdict right. I would talk with the judge and some fellow other clerks who kind of listened in on the case, and the juries just never understood because when it came to, like, legal standards such as negligence, where I spent 6 months in law school trying to understand, they would read the negligence standard on a piece of paper once to the jury, and if they had a question about understanding the standard, The judge could only read the exact same piece of paper a second time, and that's all the assistance that we'd be giving to a jury. So it just doesn't seem like jury trials are legally fair or efficient to a, to counsel.
Well, part of the problem is that both criminal law and civil law have gotten very complicated. And as we've increased the number of civil laws and criminal laws and the number of, you know, criminal protections, it is very hard sometimes for juries to understand the legal standards in both criminal and civil cases. But it's incumbent upon the attorneys and the judge to, you know, ensure that juries do understand these standards and that they work with the judges to rewrite the standards and explain all of this to the jury.
Thank you for your call. We go now to Jamie from the Upper West Side. Hi, Jamie.
How you doing? I'm a retired trial attorney. I've done many jury trials, summary proceeding trials. You mentioned housing court. You're not entitled to a jury trial in housing court. It's a summary proceeding. And by statute, there's no way to do it there. But without the jury is the most important part of the entire legal process. And it's not only important for what, it's the only thing that has real integrity. It's the only thing that I always believed in. But without that standing at the end of the process, you couldn't even get any type of integrity in the motions, in the discovery, because, like, everybody knows that if the jury's at the end, you're going to have to face the truth. And juries are incredibly honest. They're incredibly intuitive. They do an incredible job. But judges want to avoid it because it takes too much time for them. They don't have the time. And everybody else complains about the cost. But without it, there is no legal system.
Jamie, did things vary depending on how much there was concern about crime and security? Is a jury more likely to convict if we're going through a period where, like the 70s, where many New Yorkers felt that they were threatened by crime?
You know, you could actually, in the 70s and the 80s, the best criminal attorneys were prosecutors that then switched over and started to do major felonies and capital cases. And they would go against the same office that they once represented. But nobody does that anymore because nobody has the ability to get enough jury experience. Like, they do everything they can to keep you away from a jury and to keep you away from that part of the process. And like, it's amazing. They will spend more time avoiding the trial than it takes to actually do it.
Yeah, and when Alex de Tocqueville came to the United States and wrote about prisons and wrote about democracy in the U.S., you know, he was struck by the jury system and admired it and said, you know what, the jury system, it's also a great way to teach American citizens about the law and that it really was this integral part of our democracy. And I think that's important, right, that there's something about jury practice that benefits the citizens who are on the juries as well. They learn a lot. They learn about the law. And they're part of, you know, shaping the law and shaping these legal outcomes.
My guest is Lauren Brooke Eisen of the Brennan Center, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. This is the Leonard Lopate Show. Johanna from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
The reason I'm calling is because I have been a criminal defense attorney here in Manhattan. I have cases all over the country. I've been a lawyer for, I guess, around 10, 12 years now. My clients are extradites from Colombia, from Mexico. I've never once had a client go to trial. And in fact, when you are meeting these clients for the first time, you know, hoping that they'll hire you, if you even mention trial, they don't walk away, but they will not hire you. They won't hire you.
They all want you to strike a deal?
They all want you to strike a deal because it's gotten around. If you go to Colombia and talk to these guys, they know that if you go to trial, you are looking at 30 years, 25 years, maybe even 40 years. If you strike a deal, you could be out of a U.S. jail, you know, in 3 years.
Well, and that's one of the, you know, thank you for bringing up this very valid point, which is that most defendants in this country, they have very little to gain at this point in going to trial, and that's precisely because of our laws and the, you know, increased statutory penalties that we've seen over the last couple of decades.
But what happens if you're not guilty? Don't you assume that if you go to trial, you're going to convince people that it wasn't you, that the evidence will make it clear that you couldn't have done it?
In some cases, you know, we've learned so much about trials and witness bias over the years. And in fact, even if you do go to trial, you could potentially lose because the witness thought he saw you, or thought you were the wrong person, or you were misidentified in a lineup, or somebody was, there's so many things that go wrong in criminal trials and in the investigatory process that a lot of defendants don't have anything to gain.
Many years ago, when I was on a jury, we found the defendant not guilty, the judge then, I gather, chastised the ADA for putting somebody who worked in radio on a jury. Felt that that would automatically suggest that I had some kind of a liberal bias, which, of course, I felt was insulting. I want criminals to go to jail.
No, and it is interesting. I mean, when we talk about the jury makeup, you never really know, you know, who will decide to acquit or who won't. But, you know, I'm a former prosecutor, and I remember being trained, there were certain stereotypes of people, like school teachers. There's sort of this rumor among prosecutors that school teachers are find it harder to convict because they're very understanding. And there are a lot of stereotypes. So it is hard, the sort of art of picking a jury, and you never know if you get it right.
I was also concerned about the collusion between the judge and the prosecutor.
That's another interesting point, and that a lot of people have criticized those types of relationships because a prosecutor does tend to stand in front of the same few judges on a daily, weekly basis. But you know what? A lot of public defenders are in front of judges on a daily and weekly basis as well. And so the same could hold true sometimes for the public defender relationship as well.
Kevin from Staten Island, hi, you're on the air. Hello, Kevin.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Oh, Mr. Lopez, I have a little experience with the, not as a attorney, but one of the things I noticed that your guest didn't mention is the prohibitive cost of hiring an attorney. At one, especially at the federal level, at one point I was I had a case, and it was going to be possibly potentially appealed at the federal court level, and the attorney told me it's going to cost $50,000 just to go through the door. So there are negotiations that go on with the prosecutors all the time, and there are cases that are reduced from felonies to misdemeanor. I think I believe that one of the big causes of I wouldn't want to go to trial is if it costs $50,000 for me to just start a case, and then that's gonna and the meat is running. It would be prohibitive for me to do anything but accept a plea deal. I'm looking for an ear.
That's an excellent point. It is prohibitively expensive to go to trial for a lot of people in this country, especially the civil cases. There are some pro bono attorneys in criminal cases. There are a lot of public defenders. But if you are facing serious charges and you want to hire a private attorney, they do cost a lot of money. And it's because trials now contain so much evidence. There's just so much research that has to be done. There's so much discovery. It's very hard to go to trial and not spend a lot of money.
Omar, who called in but is not on the air, he was following up on your comment that judges can be biased, and he wonders how does that come out? Can they ignore constitutional law?
No, I mean, judges have an obligation to follow the law, but everyone has some sort of inherent bias, and it's not necessarily intentional bias, but there's something, we're learning a lot about police officers and inherent bias in policing and inherent bias in identifying witnesses And there's been a lot of research in the last few decades about human beings' inherent bias. And there's even something, if you're a witness to a crime, there's something called, if you're a police officer investigating a crime, there's something called, case bias, when you may have an idea of how a crime occurred and you're just not that willing to listen to other evidence or other people's thoughts about how a crime could have occurred because you already have your own narrative.
And the bias sometimes can lead to a lenient sentence. We don't have much time left, but are there any proposed reforms?
Well, there are a lot of things that, various constituencies and groups and nonprofits have suggested over the years that would increase the number of jury trials in both civil and criminal cases. One idea is to just improve the funding and the quality of indigent defense so that defendants don't feel compelled to accept a deal as often as they are. We can also recalibrate our sentencing regime, making the default sanction for lower-level crimes alternatives to prison, such as probation, while lowering these statutory prison sentence ranges for more serious crimes.
Peter from Connecticut, you're going to have the last word here.
Hi, yes, this is Peter. Actually, I'm on vacation in Connecticut, but I am a public defender for 27 years in New Jersey, tried about 175 jury trials, 40 murder cases. And I could tell you what's going on, and your guest was touching upon it, is the statutory sentencing has chilled a person's defendant's decision to go to trial. So, for example, a robbery case in New Jersey, you may be wrongly accused of robbery, and if you go to trial and, God forbid, you were convicted 10 years ago, you'd be facing, say, a sentence where you would have only like a four-year parole disqualifier. But now that same sentence, because of the 85% parole disqualifier in New Jersey and around the country, is that if you're convicted, you have to serve 85% of a 15-year sentence. So minority people feel that the system is biased against them and that the risk is really too great,
Absolutely.
And so, go ahead.
And we're also seeing the same thing in sex crimes, where if you go to trial, you might risk being put on the sex crimes registry for life in many cases. And if you accept a plea deal with a prosecutor, the deal might be for a misdemeanor sex crime where the registry is actually not triggered. So that's a huge gamble as well.
We've run out of time, but I guess we're not going to resolve this, but let's hope that we see some improvements in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Lauren Brooke Eisen, we've been talking about how trials are increasingly bypassing juries. She's a senior counsel in the Brennan Center's Justice Program at the NYU School of Law. It's been a pleasure having you back on our show.
Thank you.